Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 505 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Claire Bubb, and she's the author of, drumroll, How to Eat. What? Wait a minute, How to Eat. But there's a subtitle, An Ancient Guide for Healthy Living. All right. Do the ancients know something we don't know? Dr. Bubb, tell us the truth. Do they?
Well, you know, it's very insightful to think about a totally different time and culture eating food. And they're thinking about lots of things that I think really resonate with a modern reader, even though the details might not line up. Some of the philosophy of how to approach it, I think, is just as relevant today as it was 2,000 years ago.
Well, you know, I took a Hippocratic oath, so I've been following Hippocrates for a long time. And I don't know, he sounds like an interesting dude to hang out with back whenever he was. Speaking of interesting background, so you're an assistant professor of classical literature and science at the Institute for the Study of the Ancient World at New York University. Oh my God, that's a mouthful. I mean, all right. So first of all, I have ridiculous respect for people in the classics because I'm just such a fan and history, et cetera. And you focus on Greco-Roman medicine and the biological sciences. So what's up with that? Where in heaven's name did you fall in love with doing something like that?
Well, so I originally thought I was going to be a practicing doctor, but then I became a classics major in college and took a hard turn. It was a different version of thinking about medicine, and I decided to become a historian of medicine instead, because there's so much material, and it's fascinating to think about how people in the past tried to grapple with staying healthy and curing diseases.
Okay, that was a super hard turn. I'm just telling you right now. It's like,
right?
I don't know, classics, blood, you know. I mean, seriously? Oh my gosh. All I can say is thank heavens you took that turn, because otherwise you wouldn't have written this book, How to Eat. I just think this is so cool. Now, you've written other books and you've been looking at this whole issue of medicine, as it were, from a variety of different angles. You've done the social and medical history of classical antiquity, medicine and the law under the Roman Empire. That must have been a riot. But all of a sudden, here we have How to Eat, an ancient guide for healthy living. I mean, that was so compelling to me. I just absolutely had to read this thing and really understand. So how did you get into this one particular topic, how to eat?
Well, so yeah, as you said, I've got very esoteric interests in ancient ideas about how bodies worked, essentially. That's what I study. That's what I really like to think about. And so I'm working on a more sort of academic book aimed at people who study history, thinking about how ancient Greeks and Romans think about digestion and blood, and what happens when you eat something, and what does that do to your body, and how do you change the food? What happens to the food? What happens to your body when they interact with each other? And so in the course of doing the research for this, I was reading all these amazing ancient texts about dietary recommendations and about foods and what different foods do to you. And it's just so, every two pages, you have this moment of like, yes or no, this is incredible. And I thought that other people would enjoy going on this ride with me. So I leapt at the chance to do a more sort of popular public-facing book to give other people the same fun roller coaster of reactions that I was having while I was reading these really intimate, you know, we eat food every day and they ate food every day. And so it's an intimate way of connecting with people who lived thousands of years ago, who were doing the same things that we're doing and thinking about the same things we're thinking about.
So there were pieces of this that just were wild and crazy, that literally I was reading to my friends. I said, you got to hear this. And what was interesting about the book is on one side of the book, and I guess you were just showing this, apparently you know how to read Greek and Latin. I mean, like, My hat's off to you on that one.
Thank you.
But on the left side of the book, once we got into each of the different people, starting with Hippocrates, was their language as they wrote it. I remember at first when I was flipping open the book, I'm going, oh, this is going to be really interesting. And I went, whoa, I don't understand that. It's like, where did that come from? And then I looked on the right side and sure to form, there was the translation in English. And so I thank you for that. Otherwise, I'd still be plowing through the first page. But you must have a lot of favorite moments with each one of these individuals right off the bat. I'm going to share my favorite. Then you have to share your favorite. Okay, so we're going to play a little game here. All right, my favorite, your favorite. Now, with Hippocrates, this was the wildest of all. And so what he basically said was, what you should do, this was great. I was trying to find the exact area here. So what you want to do is the transition from winter into summer. And you do this by cutting down on food and ramping up on drinks. Folks, we're talking alcohol here. I mean, they're not playing around. I mean, they didn't have any Diet Coke, right? So it's like water or wine. Those are the two big ones here. So it says ramping up on drinks. All right. So this is what Hippocrates said. You should apply the same logic also to the transition from summer into winter by doing the opposite in the autumn. Eating more food and drier, and dealing with dishes appropriately, and as for drinks, making them less copious and less diluted, so that when it is good and winter, you will be habituated to infrequent drinks, very little diluted, and food that is as abundant and dry as possible. They're apparently liking the dry food. For in this way, you will be most healthy and least shivery. I loved that. Shivery. Okay, since I'm cold all the time, I'm like, I kind of relate, right?
Yeah.
For the season is cold and wet. And this is very interesting. For those whose constitutions are fleshy, soft, and ruddy, it is advantageous to use a drier diet for the majority of the year, since the nature of these sorts of constitutions is moist. What the hell is he talking about? Oh, gosh. All right, go for it. What does all that mean?
So I think this is maybe the coolest thing about ancient dietetics. It is 100% individualized and reactive. So the basic idea here, the reason these doctors are so interested in writing these texts is they knew that they don't have the capacity that we have to fix people, right? So you got sick. Odds were not great that they were 100% going to be able to fix this. You know, you weren't sure what the outcome was going to be. So there was a lot of emphasis on preventative care. It's better for everyone. It's better for the doctor's reputation. And it's better for your health and livelihood if you can just stay healthy in the first place. So all these texts about how to eat and how to what to do in the winter, what to do in the summer are about staying as healthy as possible at all times of year. So this is why in the winter, it's really cold out and you need to kind of counteract the cold by eating hot, drying foods because it's a cold and moist season. So you might, in a cold and moist season, you might get diseases that are related to coldness and moisture, you know, like pneumonia is something that might happen to you in the winter. But if you're eating really hot, dry food, that'll protect your body and not make it so susceptible to cold and moist. So you get this seasonal back and forth of the weather affects you and food is a way of kind of fighting back against the weather and balancing yourself out so you stay healthy. But then you talk about these people, the fleshy people or the leathery people. Every individual is different, right? Some people, you said you're often cold. My skin is always dry in the winter. It's like people know, am I a dry person? Am I a wet person? Am I a cold person? Am I a hot person? How do I run? And so different people need to eat different things. You know, a diet that's good for a 25-year-old man is not going to be the best diet for a 57-year-old woman. And you've got to think about what suits you best. So they were extremely personalized. It was like a one-on-one conversation, you and your doctor, thinking about what time of year it is, what type of person are you, how old are you, where do you live? Now that we know that, let's get like the perfect balance of food for you to eat so that you stay perfectly healthy.
So does this like completely weird you out that here we are? Flashing forward to today, in a novel concept is customized, individualized, right?
Yeah.
Patient care.
Yeah.
It's like, sit down. Let's have a conversation. Oops, the 11 minutes are up. We're done. You know, you got to get out of here. Versus now we have concierge medicine.
Yeah.
Where you pay a lot more to be able to access a physician that's not as overburdened with 1.5 million patients, and they can spend more time with you, like Radical Thought, 60 to 90 minutes, right? But, you know, the accessibility is financial. At the same time, we also have the rise of the functional physicians. And when I say physicians, I mean practitioners also in general. So we've got, you know, everyone from nutritionists and all the rest of it. We now have the Functional Medicine Institute, and everyone's looking at it. It's like, I'm so unique that I came up with this concept. I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think Hippocrates had it all over you, honey. And now you have people who are looking at plant-based diets and getting rid of ultra-processed foods and all the rest of it. One of the main reasons I wanted to have you on, Claire, was to one of the greatest gifts historians and classics experts like yourself give us, right? It's a great gift, is history. How many people, you know, even remember history? Do you even do it anymore? And I have to say, busted, since I was mostly pre-med and pre-science and math and all that craziness through school. It was like, oh, you're going to make me take history. So this was one of those, I memorized it before the test and then forgot it within 10 minutes of leaving the classroom. But now I'm like a history person. You know, I'm like surrounding myself with smart people like you, because one of the things that I think that's so terribly important for people is to have an appreciation of the context within which we currently live. And you don't know that unless you know history.
Yeah.
So when I'm reading what Hippocrates was saying, I'm thinking, huh, he was on to this individualized, customized care. So much, you know, it's so many years and centuries before we did.
Yeah.
And now we've come a bit full circle because we've looked around and we've said there are fascinations to what we do in medicine today. I mean, we have some pretty amazing stuff, AI, the rest of it, robotic surgery, this and that. I mean, it's all good. That's good. But medicines and all that stuff, we have to say to ourselves, are we doing everything humanly possible to optimize our healthy living? Are we doing that? And are we looking at ourselves individually? Are we seeking providers who will honor us where we are? Does all this make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the reasons really why I was excited to write this book for a broad public audience, not just people who are into the Greek and the Latin, because I think exactly as you say, thinking through how we got where we are and the historical arc and why we are where we are can help us make choices and take the bigger picture. So I think we, as you say, we have an amazing healthcare system. I am so glad I do not live in ancient Greece or Rome, right? The odds that I'm still alive are tiny at this point, that I would have made it this far. There are all sorts of things that modern medicine does for us that are amazing. And at the same time, I think the fact that I know, oh, well, if I get sick, I'll go to my doctor, she'll have diagnostic tools, she'll be able to figure out what's wrong with me. And odds are pretty good she'll be able to fix it. I mean, we can't fix everything, but we can at least try to fix most things, and we can fix a lot, right? Basic things that killed massive amounts of people, like diarrhea was number one killer in a lot of circumstances. We can handle that. We know how to fix it now. So that sort of complacency that we have in modern medicine that, oh, we figured it out. We're great. We're 21st century medicine. It's incredible. Sure. That's great. I mean, it's fantastic and amazing that we have this. And I think looking at a society that did not have that and was really, you know, if I get sick, this is serious. You know, I could die from pretty much anything at any time. And it's not clear to me the doctors might be able to help me, but maybe not. And even the doctors said, we might be able to help you, but maybe not. It depends what's wrong. So this awareness of the importance and the fragility of health and making intentional choices. So there, because of their lack of our modern the miracles of modern medicine, they were very conscious about how fragile health was. And that if I've got it, I need to be on the alert at all times. I can't just become complacent. I need to always be thinking about, am I doing the right thing for my body? Am I thinking about my diet? Am I thinking about my exercise? You know, I don't feel well this morning. Should I push myself? No, I should not push myself. I don't want to. The consequences of not paying attention were so much more enormous for them. And I think that's a helpful perspective for us. All things considered, I'd rather not get sick and then be healed. I'd rather just be healthy in the first place. So regardless of the details of how they thought they could achieve this, I think that mentality is something that's still thought-provoking and resonant for anyone who is alive and has to think about their health, right?
Well, so you're so right. And what I find myself doing, sort of stepping back now, is I'm cherry picking. So I'm saying we got some really cool stuff, you know, as a physician working in critical care for a long time as well. I mean, we have tools, and there's one thing we are magnificent at in the United States is if you need acute care, like, you know, you got run over by a Mack truck or whatever, you want to be in the US of A because we have this down to a fine science. And so that's all fabulous. I think where we're stumbling around is the fact that we built an environment and a lifestyle that is not particularly conducive to health and well-being. That's probably understatement of the year, but so we have an obesogenic environment. We have an environment that does not encourage moving around and actually getting up, assuming the vertical and rocking. But we're now becoming much more aware of the fact that we've got a huge problem with this. I mean, people like myself have known this for years, and we've been ranting and raving and beating on walls and that kind of thing. And finally, we're getting some traction here, and our little activism is starting to actually transition to implementable plans. And we want to achieve some goals here to affect everyone. I want to see recess back for kids. I want to see more playing around after school back for kids. Just start with kids and you get the whole family and teachers. You know, it's kind of a threefer and it works. So that's kind of where I am. And speaking of lifestyle, you've got a chapter here. Now, am I going to say this right? Diocles?
Exactly. Yeah.
Talk to me. All right. Diocles. Who the hell is Diocles? Tell us who Diocles is.
Yeah. So this is a cool thing about ancient science. We've got some big names, right? Most people have heard of Hippocrates. I've got some bad news about Hippocrates. He's actually a bunch of different people. It's kind of a brand name almost. There is a historical Hippocrates, but he didn't write a lot of the texts that are ascribed to his name. It was kind of a group effort. But everyone knows that name. It's a big name. And it was kind of a brand name in antiquity, and it still is now. The next most famous is probably Galen, who works in the like peak of the Roman imperial period. And then that's pretty much it that most people can name. But there were hundreds of doctors working in antiquity. I mean, this we're talking about a span of about 800 years, 700 years. And so you get lots and lots of names. And because we have these two very popular names, those tend to be the ones that survived. So we have an enormous amount of texts by Galen. We've got about 60 texts in the Hippocratic corpus. But there are all these other guys. And the people who do survive talk about them and write about them a lot. So Diocles was a big shot physician in the 4th century BCE. So what we call the Hellenistic period, sort of after classical Athens, before the Roman Empire, when Alexander the Great is moving things and moving borders around. He was a big name, really important. We've lost everything that he wrote. So none of the books survived. But he was so cool that later authors would cite him, would quote him and say, oh, here's the passage from this, the great physician Diocles. And so the one that I include in the book is the longest one, and it's amazing. It's one of my favorite pieces of Greek. It's so personal. It's down to the minute by minute when you wake up in the morning, this is how you should spend your day.
Okay, so you know who this reminds me of is the guy who's all, he went virtual, right? He's all over the place. Brian Johnson, who is the young man, I think he's like 40-ish. And what he's doing is trying to be someone who will never die. And so he's a multi-grillionaire. And what he's done is he measures everything about himself. You've got to read this. And there's a Netflix special with him. It's called Don't Die, something like that. It's like, okay, well, you got me at Don't Die. And let me see what this is about. And then you look at what he's doing. And what he's doing is he's spent millions, because he has millions. He spent millions turning himself into a science fair project. And what he does is he shares it for nothing, because he doesn't need money. He's not going to say, pay me money and I'll give you my secret. No, it's more like, hey, join, you know, bring it on. I think he calls his program the Blueprint. And what he does is, from the moment his eyes crack open in the morning, he shares everything he does. So he's got, you know, you wake up and he's got certain hues of light that come on that kind of are more welcoming, like a sunrise kind of thing. You know, it's not like immediately you're in the sun. And then he's got red light therapy and infrared sauna. Then he works out for God knows how long for a while. And he's completely, absolutely all vegetables. And he's got shakes and things like that and whatever. So everyone now is getting used to seeing him pop up on podcasts and shows and whatever. And he goes, and this is what I do. So this is what I thought when I opened up the book and it said the chapter was Lifestyle with Diocles. And I'm like, okay, what has this guy got to say? And here it goes. Folks, does this sound familiar? I mean, how long ago was this? Seriously, Diocles? How long ago was it, Claire?
He's about 2,500 years-ish.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right, 2,000 plus or minus. Okay, here we go. The first step in a practical approach to health lies in the transition from sleep to awakening. For most people, their sleep to awakening is they just fall out of bed. They're like, okay, all right, I'm late already, and I'm panicked, and I'm running around. Where's the coffee? All right, so, but for him, right, he continues, right? Sleep to awakening. Things are going well when awakening occurs, for the most part, after the food has already moved from the stomach above to the bowels below. I loved that. I'm sorry. It's just, it's so awesome. Okay, a little anatomy lesson here. Okay. It is a good idea for the young and those in the prime of life. That was probably like a 30-year-old in those days. All right, in the prime of life, to wake up a little before dawn. Okay, so for all you partiers out there, going to have to think about this. All right, before dawn, about 20 minutes, 10 in the summer. Like, who's counting? All right, 10 in the summer. For older people, a little closer to dawn than this, both in summer and in winter. I mean, where does he come up with this stuff? I just love it. When you wake up, you should not immediately arise, but remain lying down until the sleep-induced stiffness, we call it osteoarthritis, the sleep-induced stiffness and sluggishness, that's a hangover, sluggishness, have ceased. Oh my God. I read the whole thing to a friend and she was rolling on the ground going, this is superb after getting up. It is suitable to massage your neck and head thoroughly to address any stiffness that has arisen from lying on the pillow. I just, really, Claire, is this the coolest? Seriously?
I love it. It's so intimate, right? It's something everyone, all of us wake up every day. You know exactly what he's talking about. You got to rub the Greek out of your neck. And it's minute by minute. He goes through the whole day, what you should do. And I think your analogy is great because this text obviously is written for someone who can spend his whole day doing nothing but making sure he's healthy, right? It's aimed at the elite, the wealthy, the people who have no responsibilities and who have endless resources to achieve this.
That's the part that kind of got me like, got to ask Claire, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm reading all this, he constantly says, now don't rush. Don't rush. I'm like, don't rush? Are you kidding? 7 a.m, I'm rocking. I'm already on the phone with Asia and we're already rocking and rolling with virtual me. I mean, seriously, don't rush. Just whatever you do. Don't rush. So what do you do for a living, Diocles? Oh my gosh. I mean, all of these things that were noted, was this, I'm just really curious, whether it's Hippocrates or Diocles or whomever, was this written mostly for the privileged class?
Absolutely. So these are the people who could afford a doctor. These are the people who had the time, particularly preventative medicine. It's about people who are able to go all in, right? This is what you do. You're trying to be as healthy as possible. And we actually have texts from as early as the 5th century BCE, so 500 years before zero, saying, all right, I know this isn't practical. Like, most of you aren't going to be able to do this. So, but anyone who has the time and wants to be super healthy, this is the ideal way to do it. But then they also have things, if you can't do that, if it's not ideal circumstances, if you say, have a job that you have to go to, this is how you handle that. So they do, they have sort of the perfect, if all you want to do is be the healthiest person ever, this is how you do it. And then some backup plans for the rest of us who don't have that option. You know, if you have to work in this time, well, then you could shift this here, you could do this. If you don't have access to these foods, here are some other foods that you could eat. Even that, of course, is for people who still have choices they can make, right? There are huge numbers of people in antiquity who were enslaved, right? They had no choice whatsoever. They had to do. And so they're, you know, that health, then it depends who's thinking about your health and who's making the choices for you. So there's definitely a broad spectrum. And these are for people with the leisure and the money and the resources to prioritize their health above all other things. Not everyone can do that, right?
When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Bob to talk to us about self-care, all right? Self-care a million years ago compared to today. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay, this self-care thing. All right, reading this Diocles thing is just, what it reminds me of is the only magazine I really have any subscription to outside of all the nauseating medical stuff I got to read, right, is Vogue. So I just like, you know, kind of scoping, see what's going on. Most of it's fairly nauseating, but it's cool, right? And they have, I just love these columns because they have an online on a daily basis. They kind of give you a little updates and this and that. Hi, the 35 skincare products I use in the morning. I'm like, okay, all right. Well, I'm reading this thing with Diocles and it's like, I don't know. You know, he's like, you've got to rub down the entire body with a little olive oil in the summer now. Mix it with water. In the winter, use it straight. Straight olive oil. Okay. Don't rush. There's that don't rush again. And rub it gently and evenly, smoothing it out. By this time, it's about 2 p.m., right? And you've been just screwing around in your bathroom all day. But that's the way I feel when I'm reading half of these. It's everything from TikTok to Instagram to all these crazy-ass influencers who say, now, all right, the next 40 things I do in the afternoon to perfect my skin and my body are, and that's it. I just like hit delete and say, you're crazy. Get a life. Just get a life. I mean, does that make sense, Claire? I mean, I'm flashing forward and we're right back there again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, depends what you want to optimize in your life, right? Things take time. And so you got to make choices about what you're going to spend time on. And the Diocles is, it's all about full body health. So it's not even, he's not worried about appearance. He's worried about, is my skin okay? Because skin is an important part of your body. Are you getting proper moisturizing? Is everything clean the way it should be? You know, are you going to sleep well? If your ears are all plugged up, that's going to affect your body. So he has you, you got to clean your ears every morning. You got to brush your teeth every morning. You know, you've got to clean your gums. He's got a whole regimen for, again, ideal health. But yeah, who has the time to do this? And he even says, there's one part later on in the day, if you have to work, I guess now is the moment. This is the hour when you should do a little work, but only if you have to. If you don't have to, there's other things you could do.
Well, right? We got options here. You know, you can sit on your ass all day too and worry about the next 35 things you have to do to be able to. Oh my gosh. I just love this. But again, it's so weird because the privileged class all over again has the money to and the time, right, to be able to access all of this and implement it a la the 21st century. But there it is. It's like everything's changed, but nothing's changed. We're right back to that again. Now, tell us.
Is it's all, it's kind of a mirror.
You know what I mean?
Society in, yeah.
It's wild. So who's Celsus? I wanted to say Celsius, but I had to control myself. So this is a beautiful chapter that I just love. Okay. Self-care with Celsus. One of my favorite things that I tell my Herb podcast folks, right, is self is not a four-letter word. Now, stop it out there. Women are just get an F minus in taking care of themselves in deference to all the people around them. It's like, no, no, no. First, I have to take care of them, then fill in the blank. You know, it could be a stranger. It could be the guy next door. It's stop it already. You need to be able to take care of yourself. This is so terribly, terribly important. So it even happened back then. So tell us about Celsus. Who is this dude?
So he is an interesting character. He, to the best of our knowledge, is not actually a practicing doctor. He's kind of a Roman gentleman. And his idea, he wrote essentially a big encyclopedia. Most of it's lost. So there was a book on agriculture. There's books on warfare. All the things that a Roman gentleman might need to know. And one of those things is medicine. And so the one that survives, it's a pretty long book. It's one of these red ones behind me on the shelf, is what you need to know. What a well-educated elite Roman should know about medicine and how it works. In part so that when you go to the doctor, you have a sense of whether they're telling you the right thing or not. And also, and particularly in the preventative medicine chapter, which is the one that I put in the book, so that you don't need a doctor. You should be able to be pretty self-sufficient. Like, you should know how to take care of yourself and what the basic things to do on a daily basis that are going to keep you healthy. So you don't have to go find the doctor or find the special.
Oh, shock.
Yeah.
I don't need a doctor.
So he has this kind of guidebook for medicine for dummies almost, right? It's aimed at people who want to know how healthcare works and what they should do and understand the system.
Okay, so I just love this one juxtaposition of these two professions, okay? A healthy person, he writes, who is both in good shape and a free agent. What the hell is a free agent? What does that mean?
So this is funny. I went back and forth with my editor on this, whether how people would interpret that, because it now has such a sports metaphor.
I know. I was going to say, like, I'm waiting for an NBA team to pick me up.
Yeah. It's basically someone, like we were talking about, who doesn't have obligations that they're tied to. So someone who doesn't have to be in the Senate every day, or someone who doesn't have, you know, their architecture firm that they have to keep going. This is someone whose entire time is at their disposal. So it's kind of like, you know, an English gentleman in the old style where they just have money and they live off their money and they don't have a job, right? So people whose entire life is devoted to doing whatever they want, these are people who should go, who should approach life this way.
All right. So now I know what a free agent is. I can stop thinking about shooting hoops. All right. So he writes, a healthy person who is in good shape and a free agent should have no need to live by special rules, okay, nor require a doctor or a masseuse. Now, come on now. What do you mean that a doctor and a masseuse are spoken about in the same damn breath? So, first of all, I completely disagree. My sports massage person is like integral to my life, and that will keep me away from physicians. And I am a physician, so I know how to do that. I can hack the system. But I mean, come on. Or a masseuse. So that kind of is interesting. That immediately made me just laugh. I said, okay. Rather, he should lead a varied sort of life, sometimes in the country, sometimes in the city, most often at home, on his estate. Oh, excuse the hell out of me. He should sail and hunt and sometimes relax, but more often keep himself busy. All right. Where laziness weakens the body, exertion firms it up. All right, there's a little memorable line. Laziness makes you an old man before your time, but exertion keeps you, I love this descriptor, teen fit for years. Teen fit. I've never heard that. I'm going to use that. Oh my gosh, I'm writing my next book right now. I'm like, teen fit. I want to be teen fit. I'm going to quote Celsus on that one. And so give a big shout out to your book. Your book's going to be all over my book. I just have so many like pieces here. It's going to be like, just go to Bub's book because this is so good. I just think this is so fascinating. I got a quick question. A little, you know, by the way, were there any women physicians?
Oh, great question. Yes, is the short answer. There definitely were. We have tombstones. This is the kind of evidence that we have. We don't have any texts written by female doctors, but we have tombstones of people who say, you know, name doctor. And it's a female name and it's a female form of the word doctor. So absolutely, yes. The big question that goes on in academic circles is what exactly these women were doing. So are they just obstetricians, gynecologists? But there's a different word for that. So midwife has its own word. Or are they people who are treating the whole body regardless of reproduction? And are they treating only women or are they also treating men? It's an ongoing debate. We don't have a ton of evidence. My own instinct is it's not just gynecology, right? Women can do other things than that. Now, certainly midwifery is a heavily female profession in antiquity for reasons that are intuitive. I think that the doctors, male doctors, could get involved if birth was complicated, but there's no reason to imagine that women who were handling particular specific female health were not also handling other topics in health as well.
How fascinating. So there were women. Do you remember the name of one?
Oh, I'd have to go. I don't want to pull one out that's wrong, but there are a bunch of them. I mean, we've got at least a dozen specific. And so we know how old they were when they died. We know where they live. I mean, it's like the writing on tombstone is like the article in a newspaper that gives you what you need to know about this person. Some of them are longer than others.
I think that's so cool because I think a lot of people wrote off women as not being physicians and maybe just like witchcraft or, you know, craziness or, well, I can only imagine, but good Lord, this is so wild. And this whole thing about how you take care of yourself, the self-care thing really hit home about the classes in society. These people literally could just do anything they want to all day long because they were gentle people, whatever that means. They were high society, whatever that was in that particular culture. And it's just sad that this wasn't accessible. Although I can only imagine that if you did a whole lot of history, as you have done, when you look at how the common people took care of themselves, I bet they had some absolutely cool ways to be able to, as it were, stay out of trouble. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we definitely know we get this very elite picture, right? Because these doctors, the doctors who are writing the texts are working for the elite and with the elite, and some of them are part of the elite, right? So we definitely get that picture of what the rich are doing and kind of what you want to do, right? So if you had the best possible world, this is how you want to handle things. But we also have some facts from people who are not doing that. So we have people sometimes called folk medicine, right? So just everyday practices that people are doing. And it's a big range of things. So these academic doctors that are in my book are only a small piece of the kind of medical landscape of antiquity. How do you handle being healthy and staying alive and preventing bad things from happening to you? So we get a lot of what we would today think of more as magic. Amulets were really big. You wear an amulet, it'll protect you from something. So that's if you don't have the money to go find the doctor, you know, but I've got my lucky amulet and it's been designed to prevent this kind of problem or to help me achieve this thing. And so that I can at least wear that every day and that'll give me something. And there's a surprising trickle down of the theories. So we'll see common people, insofar as we can see them in ancient literature, which is all written by the well-educated and the rich for the most part, you'll see things like, oh, well, people always eat this with this, and those two go together, and they do it so they can digest it properly, or for whatever reason. Or you always eat this before you eat this, because this helps you digest this. And so these sort of common countryside folk practices are using some of the same concepts about how diet works and how important it is to think about food and to balance your food to the degree that you're able to in your daily life.
You know, when you look at the centenarians around the world, you see a lot of the same kind of just commonsensical way of living, very simple, basic, elegant. And they had their own answers for things. And I did not see them making a whole lot of doctor appointments either. That didn't happen. I went to Nicoya in Costa Rica, and I actually had met with Panchika, who was the oldest living centenarian at the time. She was about 109, I believe. Yeah, I remember because everyone celebrated her 110th birthday, and then she passed away the year after that or so. And when I went up to visit, I was so fortunate. It was a hell of a Jeep ride, okay? I mean, you're going up into the tropics there, and there's no street signs or anything. It's like, hang a left where the three cows hang out, and that type of a thing. And I was absolutely so honored to meet her. She was being taken care of by her very young great-grandchild. Because seven generations of her family were alive. Wow. When you think about it, do some math.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's the thing that was wild. They asked me to sign the book because I was actually writing a big story for U.S. News and World Report on her. And so I was coming in as a medical journalist, but also, I mean, I'm a physician, right? So the great-granddaughter looked at me and she said, wow, you're a doctor. And I said, yeah. And she said, you're the first doctor to have ever visited her. I said, how old is she? 109. I said, yeah, she had all her kids up at home and she did everything she could to avoid us. And just the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, to your point, it's like, I don't know, just kind of keep it basic, keep it moving. She did that little exertion that Diocles talked about.
Endgame exercise. It is fundamental.
Okay, now, finally, let's get to the really good stuff. In the back, you had fruits, nuts, and sweets. Forget the fruits and nuts. I went right to the sweets. It's like, what do they do back there? Well, I love this. How about this? Okay. Cooked sweets. Just as for Socrates, dancing was a not disagreeable form of exercise. Interesting way to say that. All right. In the same way, cake and sweets can count as food and a meal. Okay, bring it on. Somebody finally thinking like I do. And thereby be less harmful. Be less harmful. Okay, cake and sweets. It is when you have eaten a sufficient and appropriate meal and are already full that you should exercise the greatest caution against indulging in such treats. What does that mean?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. This is one of my favorite little gems from the book.
I knew it. See, I knew it.
So if you're already full, you've eaten the appropriate amount of food, you feel full, why are you then going to have this next meal? You know, if someone gave you another plate of chicken, you would say, no, thank you. I'm full. I've eaten the food that I need to eat. So the idea is, listen to yourself. Listen to your body. Once you've eaten what you need to eat, you're done. You don't need to eat another thing. Now, if you want to eat a sweet thing, that's fine. Like, it's better to have cake for dinner than to have a full meal and then have a whole nother second dessert meal afterwards, because you're just going to overburden yourself.
He's a man after my own heart.
Absolutely.
How many times have I just, you know, said, skip the meal, let's do dessert.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's the right
instinct. Let's just do it.
If you're, you know, listening to the ancients.
Now, come on, man. If the ancients said this, all right, street cred here. All right. So I'm going to just go ahead and justify all of this with Celsus. Well, whoever wrote this, actually, where did all these recipes come from? I mean, like, oh, this one was Plutarch.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Plutarch. And so it was just sort of a hodgepodge of a bunch of really cool cookbooks.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, recipe for a homemade sweet. This is the last one. Stuff palm dates or finger dates, pits removed. Well, thank you. With nuts, pine nuts, or ground pepper. I can use the pepper. Sprinkle the outside with salt, fry in cooked honey, and serve.
Yeah.
All right. I had to think about that one. Yeah, we're pitching the pepper. That's not happening. I'm not really a salt person either. And that was kind of interesting. And then peel the best. Okay, so this is a little subjective here. The best African sweet apples and soak them in milk. When they have drunk it up, I love this, drunk it up, put them in the oven. What oven? Okay, put them in the oven at a low temperature so they dial it down. Oh, that's right. We don't have those ovens. All right. Put them in the oven at a low temperature so they don't dry out. I think that means like a low fire. Take them out when they are hot. Pour honey. Honey's like a big thing here. Pour honey over them and prick them so they drink it up. Man, these apples really have a life of their own. Sprinkle with pepper. What is with pepper? Stop it.
Well, pepper was very expensive, right? It's an import. So it's an exciting thing. Like, if you can,
oh, it's hoity-toity.
Yeah.
Ah, it's hoity-toity.
And it's special. You can get it on special.
Yeah, it's all
over the desserts, and I hate peppers. So
I know, it's like,
it makes them lots of feeling. Yeah. You took the pepper out. That sounds delicious.
I know, seriously. Okay, everyone, I cannot tell you how much fun I've been having talking to the classicist, Dr. Claire Bubb. That's B-U-B-B. This book is absolutely golden. You got to have this. I can see that I've already gifted this to several of my friends because they love the quote so much. It is something you could just read with friends and just roll around on the floor and go, oh my God, we've gotten nowhere in life. 2,000 years ago, they screwed it up and we're still doing that. And, or wow, we've come full circle. And oh, I never even thought about that. But it's called history, people. History. History is golden. It's priceless. That's one of the reasons why I'm just so honored Dr. Claire Bubb came to enlighten us about her book, How to Eat, an Ancient Guide for Healthy Living. Claire, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast. And you know, I'm going to now tap you as a repeat offender. So you know you're going to have to be back again to continue to enlighten us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Beacon. It was a pleasure. I'm really honored you had me on.
All right. And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope it out at solaray.com. And when you do, don't forget, promo code HER20 for 20% off. And hey, take a moment to leave us a review because we love to hear from you. Ah, this has been so wonderful. And a production of Podcast Health. A little something to think about. Remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get out there and, oh, Claire, carpe diem, seize the day. Thanks for listening, everyone.